Dude, so another rushed scene that I thought was hilarious is when the wedding is interrupted because there's like no pushback from Rochester. We see Mason comes up and he's like, I object to this wedding. He's already married. And he's just like, ah, you got me, whatever. He's like, yep.
Bigamy. He literally includes the line of like, bigamy, what a dirty word. But I guess I am a bigamist. Anyway, boop doop boop boop, come meet my wife. She's crazy.
That's so good. I love it. Lillian, hello, and hello, listeners. We're back with another episode of Airbuds. How's it going?
We are, Piper. It's going good. It's a like gloomy, snowy day here. Feels very cozy. Want to sit around the radio and just kind of like listen to a tale, you know?
I was just going to say, you know, you can snuggle up next to your little speaker box and turn on a tune and see what Pabst Blue Ribbon is bringing you this afternoon.
For some reason, just today I was like, I just would love a Pabst Blue Ribbon. I just feel like it's a good blend. And I feel like they're the kind of company who would ethically not use the kind of grains that they need as part of the famine relief, you know?
Yeah, I think I want a Pabst Blue Ribbon so much that I'm going to go to my local liquor store and demand that they get it in stock. Just like that man told me.
Sometimes you go and they don't have it, but then you ask them. And then if you keep asking them eventually to placate your incessant need for a Pabst Blue Ribbon, they will get them in stock.
I honestly wonder how that ad campaign, how often it did inspire people to go down. It's like, well, I heard on the radio that if I demand it, you have to get it. And they're like, ma'am, we're in the middle of bumfucky nowhere. We can't get you your Pabst. Like, you gotta go two towns over.
I just love the idea of like somebody in their marketing department being like, we need to increase distribution. We sell out where they have it. But it's like, we just need to get everybody who listens to the radio to go in and start demanding it at liquor stores. And then they'll have to buy it.
There you go. It's perfect. What a brilliant scheme. Like, why should we work so hard when we can get the people who drink this stuff to work for us?
I work full-time in marketing. You do some comm stuff. And I just, this whole time I was listening to this, I was like, that would be a lot more fun to work in like 1930s ad copy. That seems like more fun to write than the social media posts I do.
Maybe fun to write, but I don't know if you've watched Mad Men at all. It was not a woman's world, not in a place where I would want to work.
Listen, I would have been one of the guys because I'm not like other girls.
Right, totally. You would climb up that ladder just like Peggy did, and you wouldn't even have to stab your boyfriend with a knife taped to a broom handle to do it.
So obviously I've not watched all of Mad Men because it makes me sad because they treat other people so poorly.
Yes, it is a sad show. But
did Sam make you watch all of it? Isn't that what I'm remembering?
He did. Of the shows that he has forced me to watch, Mad Men is one that I do enjoy. I really like that show. So even though I agree it is really sad, the funny story that Lillian, I'm sure, has heard, but audience. So when my fiance and I started dating, he's like, oh, I want to show you one of my favorite shows, Mad Men. And I was like, I haven't seen it, but I've heard good things. Let's check it out. And so we're watching it. It's like episode one. And before it even starts, Sam's like, yeah, Don Draper is one of my idols. Like, I totally look up to him. I love him. And I was just like, oh, cool. I know nothing about this show. And I'm like, can't wait to root for this main character. And episode one, he's cheating on his wife. And I remember being like, oh, no, he idolizes this guy. Later, we obviously talked about it. He does not support his extracurricular unfaithful activities. But he likes his sense of style and the way that he climbs in business and makes a name for himself when he came from nothing. So
cool. Sam, that is one of the examples of you two being similar and yet different people, because Sam would watch that and be like, he wears cool suits. And you'd watch it and be like, I don't love that he's fucking his secretary, though. That's not my favorite part of this show.
Exactly. But yeah, no, it's still great. And every now and then I'm very nostalgic for it just because it's like the like honeymoon phase of our early start of our relationship. So every now and then I'm like, shouldn't we just like drink beer, eat a frozen pizza and watch Mad Men? And Sam's like, I love you. And I'm like, I love you. It's great. But anyway, we're not here to talk about my relationship.
But what we are here to do is talk about Pabst Blue Ribbon. So yes. This is our episode about Pabst Blue Ribbon. No. We will eventually tell you what this episode is about. As many people know, on some of our shorter episodes, so when the content is shorter, we vamp. But this particular episode of Airbuds is not brought to you by Pabst Blue Ribbon, contrary to popular belief. It is brought to you by our lovely patrons.
Yay!
And we have to thank two, that's right, guys, two more people for joining our Patreon because we love you and our love can be purchased for the low price of $3 a month.
So we've got two very special new patrons to thank today. So everyone, put down what you're holding. Get ready to applaud for Celia. Hooray! Woo! Thank you, Celia! Yay!
And Celia's not alone. Celia has a new podcasting buddy, and she has spelled her name out specifically for me, I've got to assume. Her name is Jen E4.
Yay, Jenny!
I love that. Woo! Yay, Jenny!
So thank you, guys. You're the best.
Thank you. Thank you sincerely with all of our hearts. Thank you so much. It allows us to pretend we have other sponsors like Pep's Blue Ribbon for our, and finally, probably 5 minutes into the show, mention the fact that today we're talking about Mercury Theater's 1938 production of Jane Eyre.
Yeah, radio show. Hooray.
Piper, are we going to recap this?
No, we're not. Because if we did, we would be talking longer than the program itself.
For sure. About the program. Recapping the program would take us longer.
Exactly.
Their 28-minute production with the multiple commercials for Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Exactly. We chose this of the many versions, radio dramas, because it was... Why do I always struggle with this actor's name? Tell me, Lillian.
I love it. Okay. It's Orson Welles.
Orson Welles!
I was going to make you flounder.
Oh my gosh. Orson Welles. This was his first radio production of Jane Eyre.
So here's the thing. I was looking into this because I wanted to make sure, because we did mention that when we were promoting it last time, and it is why I picked it. Mm-hmm. I believe this may actually be the first surviving radio adaption he did.
Gotcha.
And it might be the second radio adaption, because things that I learned about Mercury Theater. One, Orson Welles owned it. Mm-hmm. With a friend who had a name, but I didn't recognize it, so it doesn't matter. And then the second thing is they did two productions of Jane Eyre in 1938. There was one in September, and then there was one in March. Why is this listed this way?
Are you sure it's not just the March of the following year?
Oh, it is the March of the following year.
Well, there you go.
Well, why? This is a this is a terrible platform. It's so bad and I hate it. Wikipedia.
I think you were praising Wikipedia recently. You're like, I'm going to take over all of this. So maybe
I was criticizing it because it's incomplete lists.
Okay.
And I'm here to criticize it again. The only person I trust anywhere is Charlene. She knows everything and Wikipedia is a liar. Okay, cuz Wikipedia has one. They did another one in March of 1940, but this one is the 38 one, and 38 was in September of 38. So that was actually Wikipedia trying to mislead me. All of this can be cut out of the podcast, or we can keep it in if it's fun.
We'll see. I'll decide when I listen back.
So if you guys are listening to this, we had other cool things to say, and that's why this is so long. Anyway, he owned it, he directed it, and this was, so he was a very prominent theater actor, what I've learned in this, very prominent theater actor, very famous for his theater, started doing radio in like the late 30s.
Famous for his production of War of the Worlds.
Yes.
Which incorrectly, there's that whole wives tale that people heard it and thought it was real and actually thought that aliens were attacking. Apparently not very true. No.
Yeah, and he directed and starred in most of the radio productions that he did. Mm-hmm. And then he went on to start making films. And his second ever feature production that he directed was Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
That was the second movie he ever directed and starred in.
Which I'm sure we talked about this a bunch when we did his movie version of Jane Eyre. But just as a quick recap, in case you don't know anything about movies or cinema, Citizen Kane, often ranked like number one best movie of all time by thousands and thousands of different lists and critics and all kinds of things. And also there was that movie, that biopic kind of Mank that came out on Netflix a while ago. It was nominated for Oscars last year. And it was all about the writer who helped him create Citizen Kane. And that went into a lot of interesting details. But I'm pretty sure one of the interesting things that's often shared around the making of that famous movie is the idea that, yeah, somehow he like struck it so big that the studio just gave him complete creative control and this massive budget and all this stuff, which never happens. It didn't happen back then. It doesn't happen now. And so he was just able to do whatever the hell he wanted. I'd strongly recommend Mank, by the way, if you are interested in Hollywood and that kind of history.
And he does seem like a force, like this time in entertainment in general. Orson Welles was like the guy who got to just sort of do things. So that does make sense from the long readings of his Wikipedia I did today. This production also had a Jane that originally I was like, I don't know how I feel about her. Her name is Alice Frost. And then I found out that she's from the coolest city in the world, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and was born in 1801 in Minneapolis. And so she's probably the best Jane ever.
Probably our own Jane. Amazing. That's so cool. Aw, and she's got a name from Minnesota, too. So,
yeah.
Perfect.
So, Alice Frost, don't forget it, guys.
Yeah.
Minnesota's very old. She played an old lady in TV for a really long time.
Woo! Yay!
But now that we've talked about Pabst and we've talked about Orson Welles and his history with the radio production and the lead Jane, what do you think of the actual radio production we listened to today, Piper?
Well, spoiler alert for how my rating is going to go at the end of this. I'm not going to give this a high rating at the end. I won't tell you what it is just now. But I will say, I think the lesson that I'm learning is, and we've touched on this before, Jane Eyre cannot be adapted to short format. It just doesn't work. Unless you're doing like a comedy sketch and it's supposed to be funny. Or our quick recaps that we do.
It's supposed to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it works. But when you do it in a condensed form, the story is ruined. And I just don't think it lands. Yeah.
What do you think of it relative to our other 30-minute radio production with the family theater?
I liked this one, I think, better than that, just quality-wise on some things. I don't know. I thought Jane's voice was very Disney princess.
It didn't... Oh my God, I kept thinking she was Cinderella. I genuinely looked up her IMDb and found out where she was from because I was like, the timing would work out. Did she voice Cinderella? She did not, but she sounds like it.
Yes, she sounds like a Disney princess, which I don't think fits the character. I felt that a lot of the lines felt really rushed. And the only thing where they took their time was the proposal scene, which I thought that was like the best part of the whole thing. I don't know. It didn't do as many like sound effect things as the family theater one did. That one went all in on like whoosh, like wind noises and all that stuff. So I don't know. It just felt fast and like it didn't give me quite what I wanted. And I think if I caught this on the radio, I'd be so confused. And I'd be like, I have no idea what that was.
Well, and I think what I was thinking kind of through this, because my bar was very low, given our experience with the Vincent Price family theater version, which was about 15 years after this. So that's sort of my thoughts on why it had more like flourish to it, is that maybe they started doing more of that stuff. Because this was not quite peak depression, but was during the depression. So they probably didn't have a ton of resources. And it was the first year that they started doing these radio productions. So he also was fairly new into doing radio. I thought Orson Welles did a really good job.
Yeah.
And I thought our lovely Sally, nope, not Sally. Her name is not Sally at all. Her name is Alice. Did I say Sally earlier?
No, you said Alice before.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Swiss cheese, guys. Anyway, she did like a good job of getting through a lot of content fast, but I agree, like she sounded like a Disney princess and shouldn't have, like, and you could tell she was like playing up the naivete of Jane, which is like, I can see how you would choose to do that. And it wasn't great, but they did a good job. Like I felt like at the beginning, contextualizing, like, where are we at in Jane Eyre? It's similar to what we said last time where it's like if you know the story of Jane Eyre, this is a fun way to bring parts of the story you love to life. But if you don't know it, you don't know Jane Eyre when it's done either. They did a much better job, I think, of recapping her life in a way that was true to the book and then jumping in to actually pull real lines from the book, like her conversation with Mrs. Fairfax. The meeting on the horse, I agree, totally rushed. But something that I liked about the fireside chat they had was something that we've noted is bizarre in the book and in adaptions is when Rochester is essentially monologuing at Jane. And in the book in particular, it feels weird because he's describing how Jane is reacting. Mm. Like, instead of us getting back into Jane's head and being like, I knew my face was looking surprised. He's like, why do you look so surprised, you weird little fairy girl? And I think they captured that well. Mm-hmm. That was something that I was noting there. But what are your thoughts on those first two Rochester and Jane scenes?
Again, I'm just going to say it felt rushed to me. Like, that was the thing. And I do like you mentioned that they took some lines directly from the book, which I now, having this story so ingrained in my brain, I like when I'm listening to this aloud, I'm like seeing if I can quote it along with them. And I'm like, yeah, I know these lines. I know these ones. And so it's exciting to hear the exact like phrases said as they were written. But yeah, I don't know. I just think it just felt rushed. It's kind of like, and now I say this part, and now I say this part. Anyway, good night, Miss Eyre. And it's just like, there's no time for romance, and you need that buildup to make this a thing.
For Paps.
Yeah. Well, they gotta keep going in. Which, speaking of the whole being rushed and everything, the second ad read that they did, so Orson Welles goes in and he's like, and now we're going to hear from our sponsor. And it's almost as if he gets cut off mid-sentence when the other guy comes in and he's like, yeah, the sponsor, me, Pabst. Anyway, like, it's the Depression, see? And we got this Dust Bowl on, but that doesn't matter. We're not using the grain that you need to feed the soldiers and everything. Go down there and demand Pabst. See you later, bye. It's just like, whoa, he totally stepped on his lines. I don't know. It's just like, it all went so fast.
Yeah, I do think like that's the stuff where having the context of this is their first year of doing it. I don't have this in our plan because we both agreed that we were only going to listen to one of Orson Welles' 150,000 times he played Rochester on the radio. But I do feel myself wanting to go listen to him do one of the later ones because I'm like, did he get better at it? Like, did he like, because the music, like, the guy who I didn't remember to write down his name, so you can go figure this out for your own self, or I'll put it on our Instagram. The guy who did the orchestration for this later won many Academy Awards for screen play. Nope. What's it called when they do the music for the movies?
Soundtracks?
Yeah.
A screenplay is kind of like a soundtrack. Thank is kind of like a screenplay for instruments.
I'm just Swiss cheese brain today, guys. I'm sorry about it.
That's okay, Lillian. You showed up and you're doing your bestest.
Yeah, I showed up and I'm trying.
Yay!
But he, and mysteriously the movies that he won, I was about to call them plays, dear God, the movies that he won Academy Awards for do happen to line up with Orson Welles' productions as well. So I think they partnered up on a lot of these things. And it's always interesting to kind of see the roots of that. Like, I think this is an interesting thing if you're someone who finds the evolution of somebody's career interesting. This could be really fun to listen to. But I really liked the proposal. I think you pointed out that was clearly the scene they gave the most time to. Now, I think you probably noted this as well. They just skipped the gypsy scene altogether.
Well, you know what? Maybe that's why Vincent Price's version just dedicated a third of their production to it. Because they were like, I heard that first radio production of Jane Eyre, and I was flabbergasted that they didn't include my favorite scene, the gypsy scene. So
this is the first Orson Welles one.
Probably not
the first
radio one.
This is the first one listed on the Wikipedia entry. Mm. This is the thing about Wikipedia, once again, shooting me in the face.
Right in the face. Assholes. Dang. They're like, yeah, closed casket for you, Lillian.
So they shot me in the face because their stuff says that this was the first ever radio production, but Charlene has documented that there was one in 1931. So Wikipedia is a liar.
Dude.
But that one is not surviving, so we can't listen to that one.
That's okay. I'm not too mad about it.
I was like, I'm very done with these very short radio productions.
See, I think I would dig them if they were like long, like weekly editions where it's like, tune in next week to see what happens to Jane Eyre. And I'd be like, heck yeah, man. I'll drink some Pabst while I wait.
There is actually one from 2016 that has pretty decent reviews that is a serial.
Okay.
And they have 15-minute episodes. And I think it adds up to quite a bit of time. So that is on our list for later this year.
Nice.
I want to be excited about that.
Real quick before we jump into the later stuff. So just one example, I think the best example of why the pacing in this doesn't work for me is because it didn't really feel as if horseback scene or fireside scene implied any sense of romance. And so then when we jump into the burning bed scene, there's literally, he goes, I think that's probably a span of maybe a minute, like maybe a minute and a half, he goes from saying to Jane, witch, sorceress. And then later he's like, oh, you're leaving me? I knew you would do me some good. Anyway, bye. And I'm like, wait, witch, sorceress, girlfriend, lover. It's like, where, how? You're just like a light switch flipping on and off. What do you want?
Well, and that, I think that is like, if you had 28 minutes to capture Orson Welles and you had to sell Pabst during it, as Rochester, you would probably be like, well, you got to get his crazy. I love the overly dramatic scoring of like Jane and Mrs. Fairfax talking about it, and Mrs. Fairfax being like, he is a bit of an odd man.
Well, also, like, when they, she's describing, like, walking on the road before he, like, runs her down or whatever. Mm-hmm. They did music that literally sounds like a horse being like, and I'm like, this is classic, you know? So it's good.
Yeah. So if you, I think it's, like, a fun, quick listen. I think you can see the seeds being planted for the later movie because that dramatic writing music is so similar to what they have in the 43.
So true.
Where I always like that one where we talked about it. I still know the song of like, a man, he's a man riding a horse. Like, this is the prequel to that.
Dude, so another rushed scene that I thought was hilarious is when the wedding is interrupted because there's like no pushback from Rochester. We see Mason comes up and he's like, I object to this wedding. He's already married. And he's just like, ah, you got me, whatever. He's like, yep.
Bigamy. He literally includes the line of like, bigamy. What a dirty word. But I guess I am a bigamist. Anyway, boop, 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 boop. Come meet my wife. She's crazy.
So good. I loved it.
I also really enjoy when Jane, this is well before that, but when Rochester finds out Mason's there and he goes, Mason, the West Indies, Mason, Jane. I want to know how many Janes they snuck in this 28-minute production. I will also say, devastated that the third Jane was bad when Jane leaves and he says, Jane. And then it's supposed to be Jane.
Yeah.
But instead he just goes Jane.
Yeah. Pff, come on, dude.
I'm like,
where was the director? Like, oh, wait, it was him.
He is the director. You know what? Let's go back in time and tell Orson Welles that his future self did it better than his current self.
Amazing. We'll just like set up a TV and he's like, what is this? And we're like, shut up and watch it. Okay. Take some notes.
Here's how you do this. Okay. If you're doing a production of Jane Eyre, Piper and I are now going to explain it. Each do like a quick take that you can use as like inspiration, how to do a Jane. So here's mine. Jane. Piper.
Jane. That's the falling down the stairs one.
Yeah, perfect.
He fell down the stairs when he said it.
Incredible.
Or he fell on his tummy and slinked down the stairs like a sad, depressed snake, like we saw in that one.
Yes, which may be coming up later in our game.
Amazing.
So we have learned our lesson on these radio productions, and that's all I have to say about it. It's I have to say.
A few more little funny notes. I'll do a quick, rapid roast of this.
Thank you.
So one of my favorite lines is after Mason gets attacked, and he has a line that he either said a small word quietly or he just left it out, but it sounded so good to me, where after he was attacked, he then goes, let her be treated as tenderly as baby. And I was like, a baby? As baby. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's, I don't care if that's how it's written. That's how it is in my brain now. I love it.
Incredible.
So that was fabulous. Interesting. There was no struggling on the moors or finding family. Just a matter of like, she's like, so I left and no one wrote to me, which was weird. So then I went 36 miles to Millcote and talked to a guy about it. And I was just like, well, that's chill as hell. But I think that's the other vibe of this version. Well, it's just like, everyone's pretty chill about everything.
And then I like found out that he might've died, and I just like called to some birds in my little princess voice, and it was all fine.
Yeah. I also loved when the dude, they gave a lot of time to the man telling her what happened, who also has a very overly dramatic voice.
He's like, this is my moment to shine.
He's like, I got a job on the radio. They're going to give me 4 loaves of bread. No soup line for me tonight.
Maybe next time I'll get to read the Pabst Blue Ribbon commercials.
But I loved when she's asking all kinds of questions to get more info. And she's like, is he still here in England? And he's like, I doubt he could leave. He's blind, you know. And I was just like,
blind.
And I'm just thinking about like ways you could read into that. It's like, well, you see, he couldn't really get much farther than his front doorstep before he fell down and just gave up.
It is weird how like they start there and then the rest of the thing is about how blind he is.
Yes.
Like it's not about the fact that they fell back in love. It's not about them being happy again. It's a beat by beat. How did his eyesight go?
Yeah. They had to do the whole one day he could like see my brooch and then everything was better. So don't worry. It's
and
not
then
about
he got
love,
to see the baby,
about...
and the baby's eyes were black, and end of movie.
The end. Drink Pabst.
Drink. Most importantly, if you take one message away from this, it's drink Pabst. That's what Jane Eyre would have wanted.
Yeah. My first note, seriously, was simply like, nothing goes together better than classic literature and theater and blue-collar light beer.
Yup.
Love it.
My favorite, like, it's a stretch that you're trying to bring these two things together is Orson Welles has a blend of talents and we have a blend of flavors in our beer.
Incredible. I love it, man. This is great.
It's very good.
Everyone needs to start somewhere. So
yeah.
Here, these are the humble origins of a great man.
Yeah. All right. What's your rating on this?
I think I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you rating it out of?
4 out of 10 beer cans.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Any particular beer, Piper?
Probably Pabst. Okay. Why not? We'll continue their sponsorship.
I liked this ever so slightly more than the family theater one. Although I will say, the family theater one was funnier.
See, that's why I liked that one more. It was entertaining.
It was worse, but it was funnier. So we actually both rated that one 4 out of 10 as well. Mm. So I'm going to go 4 out of 10 for this one. We'll just stay the same.
Nice.
I'm doing Pabst in a bottle because that's what they were advertising because I paid attention, Piper.
Nice, nice. I want you to find a crushed can. Someone's chugged it and crushed it. That's what I want.
Okay, cool. One mission for me.
Yeah, find a crushed can of Pabst. I think you could find that easily. I'm tempted to Google it now myself.
Incredible. Okay, so you might be thinking, but guys, there's like a whole bunch of episode left. There is, because I made a game again. And because we decided to do a game today, we went with Old Faithful, Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Boom, 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 boom.
Meow, meow, meow. So Piper is about to see the screen that I'm sharing where I made the game. She's going to see our first matchup here any second now.
Very excited.
But Piper is going to go first for this first one. A lot of them are palette cleansers.
Nice.
Vamping because the screen's taking forever to load. There it is.
Oh, no.
Who's on the screen, Piper?
Oh, no. We have Frankenstein Pastor from our recent adaptation of Emma.
Some people know him as Mr. Elton.
Okay. We have Mr. Collins from Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
What splendid boiled potatoes. We have St. John Rivers, but he's played by my favorite St. John Rivers, which is, in fact, help me out because I'm blanking here, Lillian.
I don't remember his name.
Oh, no. Oh, wait. I know it. I totally know it. He plays Tintin. God, I'm gotta Google this real quick. Hang on.
Everyone wait.
Actor. Jamie
She's
Bell.
Coming back.
There he is. Jamie Bell. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Fuck, marry, kill for these three. Well, I'm gonna go. Oh no.
This is our, and for anybody who's been on our Instagram this last week, this is our, the worst podcast from the 1800s.
The three awful men, and if they were given microphones.
I made them a podcast cover.
Okay, I think I am going to kill Frankenstein because he had that violent outburst, and I just think he's weird, and I don't like him. Mm-hmm. I'm going to easily fuck Jamie Bell's St. John because he's Bell, and he's cute, and I'm not going to talk to him. I'm not going to listen to him. I'm just going to kick down the door of his little house. We're going to have some sex, and I'm going to be like, you're welcome, bye, and then I'm going to leave in the night, and he'll wake up the next day and think it was a fever dream, and he's like, I got to get to India, and I'm like, you're welcome, and then I'm going to, I guess, marry Mr. Collins, not because I like him, but because when I marry him, I get a room all to myself, and every now and then I get to go see Lady Catherine, even though she's awful, but I get to hang out at her cool house, and that's at least something. So
it's your own particular space where you can do whatever you want and you won't be disturbed there.
Yeah. And every now and then a wily little pig will escape, and I'll get so excited. I'll be like, has the pig escaped again?
I, too, am going to marry Mr. Collins for very similar reasons, if only because I think I could control him. And of the three men on the screen, I think Mr. Collins is the most malleable.
Yes.
And I could nap during his sermons.
Yeah.
I am going to kill St. John because I'm going to kill any time St. John is in any form ever.
Nice.
And then that just leaves I have to fuck Elton. It's not going to be good for him. That's all I'll say.
Amazing. Oh, my God. Poor man. Fabulous. Right. What a way to begin. What else do we have, Logan? Yes.
Here's our next one.
Ooh.
These are all Jane Austen men. So the first one is Mr. Knightley, also from Emma recently, because they were, and this is important, the very top of my recently uploaded photos.
There you go.
Then it's Mr. Darcy, and finally Colonel Brandon from Sense and Sensibility. Mr. Darcy is from Pride and Prejudice, for those of you who, this is your first time ever showing up to a period drama podcast.
Amazing. Okay, Lillian, you go first on this one.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about it. I just put these together because I thought it would be funny. I think I'm going to marry Mr. Knightley because I think we would have more fun banter, and like he's just a little bit more outgoing socially than Darcy, who was the other one I was debating marrying. Oh, God. But I have to kill one of them.
It's hard.
I think I'm going to fuck Brandon and kill Darcy.
Really? Interesting.
I can't believe that's my answer, but it's the truest answer of my heart.
What is it about the Colonel character that you think is so much more sexy? Is it that older father figure thing?
I mean, it's not that.
Yeah. Because I totally get it, dude. He's Snape, after all. Everyone's got a little crush on Snape.
I also feel like this is like a weird thing that I have that I just learned about me. I feel like he was a colonel. He was in the army. They probably did some experimenting. I feel like Darcy would be a very nervous virgin.
Probably, yeah.
So, unfortunately, as we established the last time we played this game, that means he has to die.
Oh my God, the curse of Lillian's lovers. Anti-lovers. Okay, I am going to marry Mr. Darcy because I have to. He is so romantic and so sweet and so sensitive and so intense sometimes. And obviously, big fancy house. Love it. He'll say that he loves... We together will be incandescently happy, which I absolutely adore. I'm going to bang the heck out of Mr. Knightley with his cute little cheeks. And I'm going to kill that colonel only because even though he's a handsome older guy, I don't remember much about him. So, he's forgettable. So he's gone.
He was a sweet, sweet bean.
He was.
Wow. That was tough. Okay.
Here we go. Lady who put it together.
I didn't put this together. Here's our next round of Austin boys. We have, oh my God, we just called him Hugh Grant the whole time we talked about Sense and Sensibility.
I know.
Hugh Grant and Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, I have no idea what this character's name is.
It's Mr. Bingley from Pride and Prejudice. And then it's Bill Nighy from Emma.
Yeah. cute. Okay, I know this one. This one's easy for me.
You go.
So I'm going to marry Bill Nighy because I love him in this movie. It's the cutest thing ever. I promise not to die in a snowstorm. I'll be with you always. And then you don't have to be so scared about everything. But I hope he's still just as sweet and nervous. And I'll gladly help put up screens around him when he feels a breeze. So totally going to marry him. Love it. Again, since I don't really remember much from Sense and Sensibility stuff, I mean, Hugh Grant is cute, but I just have a soft spot in my heart for Bingley. So I'm going to bang Bingley and then kill Hugh Grant. Easy.
Yeah, I'm for this essentially the same reasons marrying Bill Nighy. I'm going to kill Bingley. I'm sorry.
you did that last time, too.
You did nothing wrong. and I'm going to bang Hugh Grant.
Nice.
It's not that I want Bingley to die. It's that I don't think he could handle me sexually.
He just doesn't do it for you, and that's okay.
Okay, here we go.
Next.
This is the Little Women Sisters, but it's different adaptions. So we have Joe is, oh my God.
Winona Ryder.
There we go.
From 94.
I remembered the writer and I couldn't remember the Winona. And then Emma Watson as Meg in 2019. And then Florence Pugh, the love of my life, as Amy in 2019 as well.
Okay. You're up first for this group.
I'm going to marry Florence Pugh's Amy.
Cool.
Obviously.
Yeah. She's your love.
And then, oh my God. I didn't think about these.
Okay, so you said before that Bingley couldn't handle you, so that means you have to bang Joe, right? She totally can handle
That's
you.
That's true.
Yeah.
If we're going to say who could handle me in this situation, poor Meg, I'm sorry you have to die, but you do. So, yeah, Winona's writers, Joe would probably be at least fun sexually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so easy for me. I'm definitely going to marry Joe, and she and I are going to be the craziest couple of lesbians you've ever seen. We'll both be writing in our attic, wearing our little floppy hats, bashing around London, doing crazy activities, going to the theater. It'll be great. And then publishing novels together, and then writing about our wonderful lesbian lives. So Joe and I, easy peasy, that's my wife. And then, suck it, Lori, because I did marry into the March family, so did what you always wanted to do. and then I guess I would probably bang Florence Pugh's Amy, because, yeah, she's pretty and fun. And I'm going to kill, what's her name's? Meg.
Emma Watson.
Yeah, bye, bye, Emma.
Poor Meg.
You got murdered twice.
Poor Meg. You never did anything wrong. You guys have to look at the picture that I chose for her on social because she looks like she knows she's going to die.
Yeah, she's up. Her head's on the chopping block. She's ready.
She's looking so sad. And she's like, I understand.
She's like,
we all have to make hard choices.
It's okay. Okay, so now we have Anya Taylor-Joy's Emma. In one of her fabulous outfits. We have, oh, you're putting me on the name spot too.
I am.
This is, why can't I, Judy Garland. This is Judy Garland as Esther, right? It's Esther?
Must be.
I think it's Esther, yep, from Meet Me in St. Louis. And then, I'm sorry, I don't know this actress's name, but she played Belle in the movie Belle.
Yes.
Okay, so, oh, I made you go first with the last one, so yeah. It's my turn. I think I would marry Esther. I think she would just be very fun to be married to. I think in the period drama classic couple scenario, she and I as an old couple, she's the excitable one, and yes. I'm the grump sitting there reading my paper, being
beautiful.
Like, oh, I love you, but you need to calm down.
But you cry at weddings when you go to weddings together.
Yes. Exactly. So Esther is my wife. We'd be a couple of redheads together, and I think we'd be a crowd stopper when we go out to events. And I really don't like Emma for most of her story arc. She's annoying to me, so I'm going to kill her, and I'm going to bang Belle. It's going to be great.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm marrying Belle, for sure.
Awesome.
She has that money. We're going to live a fantastic life.
Love it.
And we're going to work on social justice issues together. It's my whole dream.
That is perfect.
And then I think I'm going to have sex with Emma, if only because I'm dying to pull on her curls.
Oh my God,
I just
Lillian!
Have to know.
This is definitely an explicit episode.
It's not that explicit. It's not a deeply sexual thing. It's just you're allowed to touch people's hair when you have sex with them.
Amazing. But you want to pull her hair, dude.
I just want to know. It's like a like those little kids on the playground. I'm like, I want to pull your pigtails.
Yeah. So, okay. And then Esther, unfortunately, you sweet bean, you have to die.
That's all right. Someone's got to go.
So the next one, another three palate cleanser boys. Who are these boys, Piper?
Well, all I can say, Lillian, this is the easiest answer you've ever given me. One of them is Master Edward Gracie from the Haunted Mansion. One of them is that guy whose name I don't remember from Bridgerton. And the other one.
Duke of Hastings.
Cool. Duke of Hastings. Duke of Tastings for Lillian, I'm sure. And then the last one is the sweet guy who wants to be a lawyer and declares his love for Belle and then marries her in the movie Belle.
I really want to say his name is John because most of their names are John.
Okay, this is the easiest thing in the world for me. I'm going to bang Belle's future husband. I'm going to kill the Duke of Tastiness. And I'm going to marry that forever ghost and spooky lover, Edward Gracie. Yeah.
Okay. Are you marrying the Haunted Mansion films, Edward Gracie? Or are you marrying Piper Cleveland's A Dance with the Dead?
Yep.
Edward Gracie.
No comment. The public doesn't get to know.
The public needs to read your book and find out which one they think you'd marry.
Exactly. Exactly. You can get a copy of my fan fiction for free at adancewiththedead.com.
And I assume all of our listeners have watched the new Haunted Mansion trailer that came out
last
week or so.
Dude, I think it's going to be like fine. It's like a whatever movie.
It's got a great cast.
It does
it
have
a
killer
cast.
Yeah.
It also looks like it's not going to try to tell the same story even a little bit at all. It seems like it's more going to be the ride.
Yeah. And I've, this should not surprise anyone. I've casually followed the production of that film and like how the plot has changed from being switched between directors and different stuff. So yeah, it's mostly just like, I mean, kind of similar. I'm glad it's still like a black family that goes to this cool spooky house, but they get the house, find out it's haunted. They bring in what seems to be an exorcist who's like, I don't want to do this anymore. He's all grizzled from the job. And they're like, only you can get rid of these ghosts for this family and probably fall in love with what I assume is the single mom. So it's going to be great. And there's Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
And Owen Wilson and Jamie Lee Curtis as Madame Leota. So it's going to be a fun time.
And maybe we do a Patreon bonus episode about it.
That'd be rad. I love it.
That'd be super fun. Okay, my answer to this is, here's the thing. I don't want to marry the Duke of Hastings for reasons that our book readers will understand. He lied, and I'm not on board with that.
Whoa.
And I'm also not going to sexually assault him like she does in the movies.
Damn.
But I am going to have consensual sex with him for sure.
Amazing.
So I'm going to bang him. And then I think I'm going to marry sweet lawyer John Boy. Probably his name is John. I can't remember. And unfortunately, I'm going to kill Edward Gracie.
That's fine. He's already dead.
So I'm really just releasing his ghost.
I now have a headcanon, Lillian, that you just become a thruple with John and Belle, and then you can all go and like change the world for the better together.
Yes, yes, yes. I will absolutely be their third for sure. The third added in their thruple for sure, for sure, for sure, for sure, for sure.
Very cute.
Oh my God. Incredible. Okay. Our next one, and we're now back to Jane characters. These are three different versions of Bertha. Do you recognize all these versions? I don't think you'll know the first one.
I do. It's from the short movie that they made of the ballet.
No, it's not.
It's not?
That one is Bertha from the movie that they made of Wide Sargasso Sea.
Oh.
So that is Wide Sargasso Sea Bertha.
Okay.
And then the middle one is the theater production.
Okay.
And then the last one is Maya Rudolph in SNL.
Okay. So you used an image from a movie we haven't seen, but we're supposed to answer based on how she appears in the novel, Wide Sargasso Sea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because otherwise it was like a drawing of the cover.
Sure.
I preferred a picture of a lady.
Well, I think I'm going to marry Maya Rudolph because she seems like a fun person and we'd have a great time. And I wouldn't even keep her in that attic. She and I would just be fun, happy lesbians. And I think I'm gonna kill Bertha from Wide's Her Guess OC, put her out of her misery because she's had a hard life and she needs some peace. And I guess I'm going to bang the opera singer and hope that she sings the entire time. That's my choice.
Incredible. I am going to marry Wide Sargasso C, Bertha.
Okay.
Because I truly think that with somebody who's compassionate, she could have a happy life. And I, in a super healthy way, that it doesn't require me going to therapy at all, think I could fix her.
Maybe help her, not fix.
I also think that Maya Rudolph's Bertha would be really fun sexually. So I'm going to have to... bang her. And then that unfortunately means I have to kill one of my favorite Berthas, which is National Theater Bertha.
I mean, I think we can attest to the fact that she's probably a really good lay because Jude Law couldn't stop visiting her in that attic for sex. So 10 out of 10, Rochester would approve.
Speaking of Jude Law as Rochester.
Yeah.
This is
the third one. Incredible.
So these are three Rochesters. The first one is Italian Rochester. The second one is Jude Law Rochester. And the final one is Charlton Heston, depressed on the stairs Rochester.
I feel like the rule with number three is that he spends most of his time face down on the stairs, regardless of what you choose.
I went back and forth about three times between this, my favorite picture from any Jane Eyre adaptation of all time.
So good.
And the one where he has his leg up on the chair and is just kind of like showing her his crotch.
This is way better. This is the best. Let's see here. I think I'm going to kill Heston, put him out of his misery. While he's laying there crying, I'll just walk up and put a knife in his back.
He'll be painless. He'll be fine.
He's already ready to die. Look at him. He's like, please, someone, just knife me. So I'll take care of that for him. I'll answer that plea. I think I'm going to marry Italian Rochester because he seems cool and smexy. And I'm going to bang Jude Law Rochester. And the reason I'm not marrying him is because he's very obviously unfaithful, and I don't play with that. So I'll be one of his side hustles, and then I'll go back to my Italian husband. I can cheat. He can't.
I feel like you would do it in a way that's like existing in rules. Like you guys had a conversation about it and agreed to do this.
Italian guy is like, I'll watch. It's cool. Whatever. Like, sweet. Rad.
He's like in on it. He's like about it. Like he wants this to happen.
And Jude Law's like, why is that guy in black and white? And I'm like, don't worry about it. Yes, of course. It's like a tune from Toontown, but he's a black and white character. And he'll always...
Okay, here's the important question. Are you in black and white when you don't marry?
I look high definition, modern, in color, me. And my husband is just always black and white and kind of fuzzy because the quality isn't very good. It's not 1080p.
Incredible. 10 out of 10. Love it.
What are your answers?
My answers are the same for slightly different reasons, but mostly the same. We are both in the same level of definition color when I marry my Italian husband.
Amazing.
I just think I would really enjoy living in that dramatic of a household.
Yeah.
It would just be fun for me.
So fun. And we're going to pretend, are we pretending that you magically, when you jump into this world, you can speak Italian, or are you just kind of clueless?
I think I'm like fine with it. I'm actually reading a sci-fi romance right now where the main character does not speak the language and they just kind of communicate fine. And honestly, it seems better. They just kind of like care about each other and let that be known by just being sweet to each other. And cute. I think that's how our relationship would be.
There you
Eventually,
go.
I might learn Italian, which would be a fun bonus.
There you go. Just be like, hey, buongiorno.
Does your Italian black and white husband come with subtitles?
I think I magically can understand him, but no one else. Like, if I bring him to my world, no one who doesn't already speak Italian knows what he's saying.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, and then this is the Bronte sisters.
Oh, boy.
So the first one is Emily, then it's Charlotte, then it's Anne.
Okay, so you have to give me a reminder.
We're going based off of what we know about them from the documentary.
So, because Emily wrote Wuthering Heights.
Yep.
And
Charlotte wrote Jane Eyre.
Duh. And Anne, she was the one who was, like, too nervous to go to school and...
Emily was too nervous to go to school.
Okay.
Anne definitely had a crush on that guy just because she didn't look at him in church.
Okay. And what did Anne write again?
Anne wrote some Agnes Grey.
Okay. Okay.
She's the only one who has somebody that we know she had a crush on, and he did die.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, other than Charlotte's professor.
Yeah. Okay. This is hard. I mean, these are real. Wait, I go first? Yeah, it's your turn. You have to go first.
Oh, okay. I'm going to marry Charlotte, obviously.
Okay.
And then because Anne's supposed to be slightly prettier, I'm going to have sex with Anne.
Amazing. Is it Anne the one on the right?
Yes, but this is the thing. It's like, these are such terrible pictures of all of these women.
I'm like, are you sure she's the pretty one?
She's supposed to be. I think it's just a bad painting, but it's the only one I could find of Anne.
Amazing.
They were not kind in their self-portraits, and I really feel like it's probably because they were looking in weird angles and mirrors.
And then you're gonna kill Emily.
Yeah, what I'll probably do is scurry Emily away and kill Branson.
That's not an option. You didn't put him up there. You're just going to do an additional murder. You're going to murder her and then just for fun, murder her brother because he probably witnessed the murder and you have to get rid of the evidence. Yes. Perfect.
And Charlotte's fine with it. She's actually like really on board with it.
She's like, cool. No more competition. No more dumb brother who can't keep a job.
Oh my God.
I guess I'm going to... marry, I don't really know. I guess I'll marry Charlotte. Either way, these ladies die early, so I'm going to outlive any one of them. So I'll marry Charlotte, and I'll carry on like her work in her honor and get all her money. And just to mix it up, you know what? I think I'm going to bang Emily, and I will kill Anne. Why not?
Okay.
Why that not?
Feels right. Why not? You know what? Why not kill Anne? That's what people are wondering all the time.
You know what? It'll be revenge for that bad painting. It's like you should have painted yourself better, but now you gotta die.
Oh my God. Incredible. That's it. That's my last one.
Incredible.
I may have been loopy when I picked these, and I'm very clearly loopy while we're playing this.
And that's okay.
As per always, these will be very playable on our social this week.
Fabulous. So please, if you don't already, follow us. We are at Airbuds on all major social channels. You can tell us who you want to snuggle, who you want to snuggle for life, and who you want to push into an empty canal.
And in case anybody's wondering, it's episodes like this that's the reason our podcast is labeled as explicit.
Yes. So if you have detailed thoughts about either Orson Welles or your romantic feelings / desires for revenge and bloodshed, you can send all that information to us via email. We are airbuds@gmail.com.
We have gotten a lot of really nice messages in there recently, and I adore that. If you have $3 burning a hole in your pocket, I have some great news for you. There's a bunch of games and quizzes and
art,
trivia and fun videos and art that you can buy access to. And here's the most fun part. You'll be supporting this podcast that you clearly love if you're still here. If you want to support us, but you don't have $3 that's burning a hole in your pocket, you can also give us a review, ideally 5 stars, on iTunes. Tell us about what you think the worst podcast of the 1800s would be, and we'll read it on our show if you give us a 5-star review.
I mean, I think the one with those three religious boys, it's probably
tough
that one.
To beat.
But
tough to beat.
Second might just be a couple of like plague rats on a podcast. So you know.
But you'll have to make that argument in a review of our podcast.
Exactly. So you guys, thank you so much for joining us for talking about a short radio production and our romantic thoughts on random characters. So.
And we're learning that Lillian gets bizarrely sexual every time we play this game.
You know
I'm
what?
I'm not a very sexual person. And then we play this game and I'm suddenly like, I only want to have sex with people who know what they're doing with my body.
And hey, you know yourself. That's great. Own it. We love you so much, guys. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Happy Jane Eyre reading and watching and listening.
We didn't tell them what we're doing next week. Oh. I'm sorry, guys. It's 2006.
It's a rewatch of 2006. Go check it
anyway,
out.
Bye.
Bye.